translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. As one can cross over the ocean with seagoing vessels, one can cross the dangerous situation of the material ocean by living with a wife. Purport. There are four social orders for cooperation in the endeavor for liberation from material existence. The orders of brahmacharya, or pious student life, household life with a wife, retired life, and renounced life all depend for successful advancement on the householder who lives with a wife. This cooperation is essential for the proper functioning of the institution of the four social orders and the four spiritual orders of life. This Vedic Varnashram system is generally known as the caste system. The man who lives with a wife has a great responsibility in maintaining the other members of the other social orders, the brahmacharis, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis. Except for the grihasthas or the householders, everyone is supposed to engage in the spiritual advancement of life, and therefore the brahmachari, the vanaprastha, and sannyasi have very little time to earn a livelihood. They therefore collect alms from the grihasthas, and thus they secure the bare necessities of life and cultivate spiritual understanding. By helping the other three sections of society cultivate spiritual values, the householder also makes advancement in spiritual life. Ultimately, every member of society automatically becomes spiritually advanced and easily crosses the ocean of nescience. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Gena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namam Shri. It's a very interesting verse coming in at as part of a very interesting sequence of discussions between Kashyapa Muni and Diti. And Prabhupada in this purport is very much emphasizing the obligation and the responsibility of those in the Grihastha ashram. Each of the ashrams has their own purpose. In one sense, the word ashram itself means shelter, or a type of shelter. And so people in society can receive shelter by their occupation in a varna and an ashram. And in these ashrams, a very interesting point is made, that there are four ashrams, of course, and of those, three of them, the persons or the members of those three ashrams are supposed to have very little time to earn a livelihood. So we know, obviously, the brahmachari is supposed to stay in the gurukul. Brahmachari gurukule vasandantam gurorhitam acharindashanam nicho guru saurida sauridaha. So one is supposed to, as a simple brahmachari, one is supposed to stay in the house of the guru, the gurukul, and render menial service, not trying to conduct, professional activities, but simply staying there as a menial servant. The spiritual master will send them out to collect alms, collect firewood, perform yajñas, and study, of course. And it's one of the prime purposes of going to a gurukul, to learn, to study items that will be useful for the rest of the person's life. Then in the grihastha phase, of course, one has an opportunity and then an obligation also to then accept a wife, to raise a household, to acquire a house and to raise a household and to form a household and to turn the place into a home. And then to actually not just be satisfied with that, because that is that can be done on the basis of sense gratification also. But then actually to play your part in serving the rest of society. And the idea is that by after 25 years of doing that successfully and dutifully, one will be ready to handle those worldly responsibilities over to the next generation. And then one can shift into more of a retirement phase of vanaprastha. And then of course for some, those that wish to and have the capability to externally exhibit the highest type of renunciation and really function with the bare necessities and really to have the Lord's desire and wishes and the practice of serving the Lord as their constant companion. without any other distractions. Those can, of course, then take sannyas. And the common feature with all of these three renounced ashrams, it's not that only the brahmacharis and the sannyasis are renounced. Actually, all three of those ashrams are ashrams of renunciation: brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyas. It is a feature of those that they do not act themselves to acquire funds and for their own maintenance, but they depend upon the charity of others. Now, of course, that is the, also comes with caveats, that it's not a license for unlimited charity. The key point here is that they're supposed to secure the bare necessities of life, not secure luxuries of life. So begging for luxuries is considered the most condemned activity. Sometimes people adopt a profession of professional begging, right? Sometimes when you travel to some places, you may come across professional beggars. And some, and there are teams, you could say almost gangs of them operating in different places, even in this country. And they simply have an operation to beg from others and then utilize it for their own sense gratification. That is considered exceptionally degraded. But what is degradation and what is upliftment is now such a grey area in today's society that it's no surprise that people will often choose the easy way out, because they don't actually have as a firm principle in their own minds the concept of dutiful behaviour. And dutiful behaviour is distinguished from sense gratificatory behaviour by the fact that one acts not for the purpose of satisfying and furthering the enjoyment of the senses, but one acts to actually do the correct thing according to their place in society. So this varnashram system gives everyone a place in society. We know that as a general spiritual principle, we are learning to be devotees. And our prime obligation, you could say an occupation, is almost your job description, is the servant of Lord Sri Krishna. That is the first and foremost of our duties. But nevertheless, as explained in the Bhagavatam, Atha pumbir dvijashreshta varnashrama vibhagasaha swanushtitasya dharmasya samsiddhir haritoshanam. The varanas and the ashrams also exist by the Lord's own personal creation. Chatur varnyam maya srishtam. My creation, the Lord says, not some concoction by someone. It is actually my creation, the system of four orders and four ashrams and four occupations. And so the idea is that when one acts in those ashrams and their varanas, but remembering that the goal of life is to serve the Supreme Lord Sri Hari, samsiddhir haritoshanam, then their life becomes materially stable and spiritually successful. And that's what is in... You could say there's a lack of supply of this in the world. Lack of supply of people to live such a life, focusing on Krishna as the goal, and then a lack of institutional or society-based training that teaches them that this is actually a healthy way to do things. When someone hears the word caste system, immediately whole negative connotations come, and rightfully so, because many wrong things have been perpetrated in the name of so-called caste attachments and the manipulation that comes from members trying to exploit others. The system itself is Krishna's system. It is not based upon exploitation. It is based upon, you could say, providing security and certainty and a stable place from which one can function. But as is typical with most things in this world, those who would like to manipulate and maneuver others for their own agendas will typically use whatever position and whatever facilities they have. It doesn't necessarily have to be only the persons in the top realms do this. Everyone does this. Everyone does this, whichever occupation or whichever position they're in, depending on their goals. And this is a very important element to consider when we read and understand these verses. As I mentioned in the past, the verses from the Bhagavatam, the messages, can be understood in multiple different ways. There are many, many meanings even for this verse. It has a multiple layers of meanings for this verse. And how we approach and understand a subject depends upon what goal we are working towards. And in this world, you have people who largely fall into two categories. There are those who are working towards transcendence, and then there are those who are working towards sense gratification. It is literally that simple. Now, one could try and say there are these many different nuances and this flavor and this flavor, and maybe some are a little more esoterically inclined or philosophically inclined, and maybe they're not quite transcendental, but they're not exactly after sense gratification. No, even all of those are after sense gratification. Because if we take the broader definition of sense gratification, the senses include the five senses, actually the 10 senses, including the five active senses, all grouped around the mind. And those that are after a more refined way of life do not necessarily cross the bridge into transcendence. They remain on the platform of sense gratification. It's just that their pleasure doesn't come from gross contact of sense objects with the senses. Rather, it comes from intellectual exploration. Intellectual exploration, philosophizing, maybe acts of charity, different things that give a person a sense that they're doing something that isn't so grossly connected to this world, but is still ultimately actually aimed at their own satisfaction. When one enters the path of going to the realm of transcendence, there has to be a certain trait and a certain quality. It is that my own sense gratification, my own enjoyment, my temporary happiness is not the goal anymore. It is not the goal. Rather, satisfying the Supreme Lord, or even we can refer to transcendentalists as being of a general category, even the impersonalists may be transcendental. They may have the service of Brahman as their goal, or they may have a sort of a transcendental sense of being completely aloof from this world as their driving motivation. Those are all transcendentalists of different types. And when one stays in this path of sense gratification, one may sometimes develop an attraction for transcendence. So that means that we do have these two options, sense gratification or transcendence, but there is always a portion of people who are actually situated in the realm of sense enjoyment, but who may have met a devotee, or may have met somehow the Bhagavad Gita, or the Bhagavatam, or have come into contact with Krishna, somehow or other. Now their desires have not switched immediately to desires of transcendence, but they like the idea. They like it. And that probably has applied to every single person here in this room. That at some point we were engaged in the deep, dark depths of sense gratification, and then we came across the concept of hearing about Krishna, the concept of spiritual progress. And then we embarked on the path. But we're not still there, quite in transcendence. Because for many, many people, and it's probably a figure upwards of 80% to 90% at any one time, because obviously there are people transitioning from the path of sense gratification to the path of transcendence. They are in a limbo state where devotional service is going on, but the attachments for material progress have not left them. And therefore then they are trying to do a hybrid of simultaneously trying to progress their material side of their life whilst performing duties and activities which are from the world of transcendence. And this is all very good. It is the path of progress. But one should not stay in that middle zone. One should not stay there indefinitely. Now, why are we discussing these different categories? Well, according to where you are situated in these different sort of spaces, you will view a verse like this differently. If you come from the field of sense gratification being your realm, and then perhaps you're now in this middle category, which as I said covers 80 to 90% of people, where you are now aspiring for Krishna, but without having given up those attachments and with having still a considerable immersion in the material world and its concepts, then we will read a verse like this: as one can cross over the ocean with seagoing vessels, one can cross the dangerous situation of the material ocean by living with a wife. And we will consider that this portrays and licenses household life. Isn't it? That would be a direct sort of meaning. It's the first sort of self-evident meaning that's here. That by living with a wife, a happy family life is your means by overcoming the material ocean, the samsara sagar. However, that's not quite the entire picture. That is obviously of attraction to some people, but that's not the full picture. We have to also understand the context within which this verse is spoken. And I think previous classes have touched on the state that Kashyapa Muni was in at the point this conversation is taking place. Diti is driven by lust, and she's also driven by a sense of pride and a sense of one-upmanship, right? And desiring sons that will establish her position and move things forward in a way that achieves and facilitates her desire for success in this world, which we can broadly put into the category of sense gratification. So Kashyapa Muni is being coerced by her into performing, indulging in sex life for the purpose of fulfilling her desires. And Kashyapa has been trying to sort of resist. He's failing. He's failing to resist because ultimately he's been captivated. He's been captivated by those very strong bonds, by her charm, by her powerful words. And he's completely swept over by it. And so now he's speaking words that will pacify her. He's speaking words to pacify her, to tell her that, yes, I will indeed satisfy this, but just wait a bit longer so that the time becomes auspicious. The words that are spoken in such a condition where one has already basically given in to an allurement or an enticement which is not exactly correct cannot be taken at the same level as a spiritual instruction given by a clear-headed sage practicing austerity. That is a simple fact of life. In fact, at the start of the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada, just as the discussion between Narad Muni and Srila Vyasadeva is about to take off at the beginning of chapter 4, there is an entire discussion around the qualification of Shukadev Goswami to speak the Bhagavatam. And there Prabhupada says some very strong things in the purport. He says that only one in the renounced order who is completely detached from all material considerations and dependencies is actually a bona fide reciter or speaker of the Bhagavatam. It's quite an interesting and strong statement there. Shukadev Goswami obviously was a complete renunciate. He had no time for anything to do with this world. He said he didn't even want to come out of the womb for an extended period of time. And then when he was leaving to go to the forest to practice an extended path of transcendence focused on monism, not necessarily the pure bhakti of the Lord, but the path of monism, Srila Vyasadeva started to call him, come back, come back. And seeing that he wasn't listening, different verses were recited to entice him back. When he heard the recitation of the Bhagavatam, he came back. Then he proceeded to study the Bhagavatam under his father Srila Vyasadeva, who of course was a householder. And he learned the Bhagavatam. And then his magnum opus, at the correct time when Parikshit Maharaj was about to leave his body, Krishna had arranged an entire collection of sages, saints, rishis, everyone to appear on the scene. And they unanimously selected Srila Shukadev Goswami to be the representative and to give those pure instructions which come from a position not of just knowledge, which also Srila Vyasadeva, Narad Muni and everyone else there has, but from a position of complete detachment from this world and of course a very exceptional connection with the Lord. Now that's a principle. It's a principle, but it's not a complete application, because one shouldn't take that principle and say that only those in the renounced order should speak the Bhagavatam. That is not correct either. But one should know that the spirit of renunciation is a prerequisite requirement for one to have potency when speaking. And that is also possible for those in the Grihastha ashram. It is also possible. But no serious Grihastha or sincere Grihastha will claim that it is easy and straightforward. In fact, if one does, you could say they're almost in that middle realm that I spoke of, where they would like a situation where they feel they're in transcendence, but without actually understanding the seriousness of what transcendence is. So as people are transiting from one to the other, hopefully in one direction over time, they will have a different level of seriousness of approach to this verse. Now this verse, when you look at its direct meaning, yes, it is true. For a conditioned soul, for a person conditioned in this world, if they have a household situation where they have a good wife and a good set of balances and inspirational framework whereby they receive quality instructions, then they can live a very healthy, happy life. And indeed, that will help them cross over the ocean of material suffering. Definitely. It's definitely possible. And should be the outcome, not just, it's not meant to be a possibility, it's meant to be the outcome of that ashram. That with the help of the wife, one transcends this ocean of material suffering. But one should not also forget the many, many warnings against the dangers of this, which are especially important for those in the ashram to be aware of and to consider very deeply. Practically right at the start of the Bhagavatam, when Shukadeva Goswami was just getting into it at the start of Canto 2, he starts off with Deha Patya Kalatradishu Atma Sainyeshva Satsvapi Tesham Pramato Nidhanam Pashyanapi Na Pashyati. Deha Patya Kalatradishu Atma Sainyeshva Satsvapi. The householder surrounds himself with paraphernalia, surrounds himself with wife, surrounds himself with relatives, wealth, land, occupational activities, and considers these things to be soldiers. Atmasainya shvasatsvapi. Considers these to be soldiers, which will help him in his ultimate conquest of life. However, the word used there is fallible soldiers. They're not real soldiers. You should never place your faith in these things. They will fail you at the time you need them most, on the deathbed. At the time when one is leaving, none of these can do anything for you. The sweet words of the relatives who are desperately trying to keep you in this world and are trying to remind you of all the reasons you should stay, and the thoughts going through your mind of all the attachments you have in this world and how will life continue without me, and then your own dreams and aspirations and regrets of life, all this combination will guarantee you another birth. It won't be your a method for transcendence. So we are warned that these things that we surround ourselves with are fallible soldiers, and they will not necessarily help us forward. Now, of course, the Bhagavatam speaks at great length after that initial start from Shukadeva Goswami on the principles of how one can switch from Grihamedi life to Grihastha life. And that involves changing the topics of our conversation from mundane to spiritual. Yet the warning always remains. And definitely in different places many conversations take place. Pumsa striya mituni bhava metam tayor mitoridaya granti mahu ato grihakshetra sutapta vittair janasya moho yamaham meti. That when one, engages in this situation, pumsa striya mituni bhavametam, that with the combination of man and woman, when they come together, and a very strong knot of attachment develops in the heart. And as a result of this strong attachment, griha, kshetra, suta, apta, a place, a field of activities, relatives, sons, children, all of this comes. The consequence of it is not liberation or freedom from material suffering. The consequence is janasya moho yam aham mameti. The living entity starts to think in terms of this is me and this is mine. This is mine. These are my relatives, my family, my wife, my husband, my son, my car, my house, my realm, my job, my company. Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda ki. That concept of my this, my that, simply results in the living entity getting another chance to be my. Gets another chance, another body, another realm, where they may not necessarily be a human anymore, they may be something else. But they'll be whatever they are, an animal, maybe a little piggy or something sniffling around. This is my little this is my little dung heap, this is my little house, this is my family. We have the whole pastime. I mentioned pig because we have the whole pastime of Brahma, and, right? And Indra. And Indra was cursed to become a pig, and he was very happily situated there, forgetting about normal life. This is the serious and the philosophically strong aspect that we need to remember when we're considering these verses. This is the reality. And of course, in today's day and age, what's happened is that basic relationships and basic family life is now seen as something highly elevated simply because it is so rare. If someone actually manages to have a basically successful family life in this world, they're considered to be a great transcendentalist or a very advanced person. However, that from a Vedic point of view is just the beginning. And such a person by those advanced people would be considered to be basically in Maya. A very happy, successful, healthy household life is not the indicator of transcendence. It's the indicator of someone who is in Maya but is doing Maya properly. They're doing Maya properly because they're not acting against religious principles. They're acting properly with the Lord involved, with in accordance with scriptural rules and injunctions. So we should just see in this world just how far we've kind of gone downwards, that we now need to promote basic family life as being something very elevated. But it is the reality. And therefore don't be surprised when even in preaching circles, people will often be glorifying and promoting family life just because it is needed to bring people up to a basic human platform. It is needed. Isn't it? Srila Prabhupada with his early disciples, he very much said, he very much wanted them to come and live as legitimately married husband and wife, rather than just as hippies with a licentious type of attitude and lifestyle. So that itself is a major achievement in this modern world. But we shouldn't forget and shouldn't mistake that for being the goal. That is not the goal. That is an important step, an important phase, and an important period of one's life, which should not be mistaken for transcendence. However, one can attain, even within that situation, great spiritual success. And that depends very much upon whether the persons in it have transcendence as their prime goal. Now, obviously, over the years, through preaching in so many areas, with so many people, so many families, etc., you can very clearly see there are different members, even of the same family, who have different levels of aspiration for transcendence. Often there is one member in a family who is very, very focused on spiritual life. Sometimes the wife, sometimes the husband. And the other one is not so serious, but they're kind of cooperating. Sometimes they rebel a bit as well. But they somehow the whole train kind of keeps moving. Once, I did tell this funny story before, once there was this man I was discussing with him, and I was trying to encourage him to chant and do some puja and do some worship. And he said, no, I don't bother with all of that. My wife does the devotion in this family. I just leave it to her. She does the puja, she does her japa, that's it. And I said, at the end of this life, is your wife going to take you back to Godhead, or do you also have to develop a desire to get there? Because what is the purpose of someone transporting you from this material world? Let's say someone picks you up from here and just sends you by through hyperspace or wherever to the spiritual world and leaves you there. What are you going to do there? If your entire life you've simply cultivated aversion to Krishna and his practices, and you've simply cultivated a desire for sense gratification, what will you do if you go to a place where none of this will take place? You'll be in the wrong place. So Krishna doesn't quite allow a person who is totally uninterested to enter his realm. Prabhupada said many times, you have to fly your own plane. You have to fly your own plane. Unless you actually want to be with Krishna, unless you want to serve Krishna, you can't completely rely on someone else's efforts. Someone else's efforts will help you, but they're not the full picture. Your desire is also important. And so it's a very interesting, you know, these whole concepts are very interesting. As I said, I've seen many, many people. Some are dragging others in their family along. Some members of the family are dragging others along with them. And it can be very, very successful. We should take, as he's saying, dancing, we should take the chance to chant and dance in front of the Lord. I mean, how many people have the chance to chant and dance in front of Radha Gokulananda? How many will take that opportunity? It's perhaps such an important point to mention, as today is the last day of the current year. This year has come to a close. Hopefully we've had some good time spent in the company of their lordships, chanting and dancing for their pleasure, studying their scripture. It's Krishna's words that we're studying, getting a sense of transcendence, spending time with the devotees, trying in our own way to do something to push forward this movement. And each person, if they take a little time to look back today on whether or to which degree they managed to do this in the last year, perhaps they can actually have a good, clear thinking session and consider how we can move ourselves forward in the next year. In whichever ashram we are, we have the chance, the opportunity at this point, with the mercy of their lordships, to move forward into spiritual life. If we're in this 80 to 90% grey zone, we should be trying to get into that zone of pure transcendence, which means we may take decisions to alter and improve many aspects of our life. And that will be a very nice outcome of a program for spiritual growth. So we have to keep in mind always that whilst there is a great facility in the ashram, the Grihastha ashram specifically, with the husband and wife to make progress, and it is 100% possible and definitely encouraged and recommended in the scripture, we should not try to justify sense gratification using the existence of the ashram as an excuse. And this will only be according to your choice in life. If your aim is sense gratification and you would like Krishna to assist you with that, well, fine, you will stay in that realm. But if you have somehow got a deep attraction to transcendence, then you will be willing to do anything and everything to pursue that transcendence. And each thing has its time and place. Each thing has a place. Renunciation is supposed to develop incrementally. It is not that the newly married couple immediately act as if they are sannyasis. It's not quite meant to be like that. There is a phase of things that need to be done. There is a period where attachment is kind of expected and required. There's attachment to the children, which is necessary for their healthy development also. So these things have to be kept in mind as principles, but which require very detailed and expert application. And for that, one needs guidance. And without that guidance, people just do anything and everything, and then they justify those things as being spiritually advanced. So let's keep these kind of verses in mind as instructions from a whole collection of instructions, which need to now be carefully applied for us, each of us, in our current present situation expertly. And that will allow everyone to move forward. So we could take some questions, or I can just say a couple of things about the other person for today, Jagadish Pandit, right? His special day today. Is it disappearance today? Disappearance? Who did? Appearance. Appearance of Sri Jagadish Pandit, who was a great associate of Lord Chaitanya. Maybe in one sense you could say the ideal example of a grihastha, right? He was there. He was originally from the Assam part of India, but then from a young age he was there in Mayapur and was great friends with Jagannath Mishra. And he had a wife. Her name was Dukini, and he lived with his brother Hiranya, and they were great devotees. And Mahaprabhu sent him to preach in Jagannath Puri. Mahaprabhu engaged him in preaching service in Jagannath Puri, and the Lord would facilitate when Jagadish would facilitate also when the Lord would come for Rath Yatra pastimes. He would participate, he would join those adventures. But this is just one special little incident with which we can view Jagadish Pandit. And this is in terms of how Lord Chaitanya treated him. When Lord Chaitanya was little, very small, and in his house, of course, Ekadashi was being observed. And Ekadashi fasting was going on and like that. And Lord Chaitanya, little Nimai, started crying. He started crying and he wanted something to eat. And he was crying and crying, and they were asking him, "What would you like?" And he said, "At the house of Jagadish and Hiranya, they have prepared nice rice preparation, nice grain preparation for Lord Vishnu. I want some of that." This is Lord Chaitanya's thing. And Mother Sachi is going, "Oh no, today's Ekadashi. What? Why is this boy asking for this?" And the other friends were saying, "How does this young boy even know what Ekadashi is? Something mystical is going on." And so he recognized that there was some nice items being prepared. And then, of course, they brought those items. Lord Chaitanya happily ate them, and he was very, very satisfied. He stopped crying immediately. Of course, this is a principle, isn't it, that it's not so much that the Lord is supposed to fast on Ekadashi, right? Vishnu should always still be offered the full items. But we should take care, actually, when we make the offerings, we should take care that the spiritual master should not be offered, necessarily, should not be offered grains. It's not technically correct, but it's a matter of debate also. And these are the nuances of spiritual consideration, right? Because we understand that the spiritual master will offer those items to Krishna and will not take anything. But because the spiritual master themselves will be following Ekadashi principles, when we have a situation of making special plates for the spiritual master, those should be Ekadashi, of course. And so these are all nuances and all details and all different ways to consider these pastimes. But these two were great, great devotees. And Jagadish's wife, she was very special as well. Once Lord Chaitanya was about to leave Puri, and she was very, very upset, and she came to the Lord and didn't want him to go. And seeing her great devotion, Lord Chaitanya gave a special murti of himself, a golden colored murti. And she continued to worship that, and there's a temple obviously now, and that worship has been going on of that deity. Now imagine how potent it is to worship Lord Chaitanya from a deity given to you by himself. That's an indicator of the complete spiritual advancement of this couple, this family. Possibly a great example of how this verse, if you take the literal meaning of it, is completely true. That when there is a good husband and a good wife, and transcendence is the goal of life, and great attachment to Lord Sri Krishna, great success happens for everyone. So everyone can take great courage, great strength, great inspiration from this. And hopefully we can move forward into the new year with a sort of healthy, happy, and cheerful attitude towards transcendence, which is accompanied by austerities. But when those are approached with cheerful attitude, they become relishable. So thank you. I'll stop there. See if there's any questions, comments. Yes, Prabhuji?
Thank you for my class, Prabhuji. Just a tiny comment. In Hungary, they also don't offer Lord Chaitanya grains.
Okay.
So I remember the Oka,
yes.
Kadashi.
The point was, in Hungary, on the altar, they don't offer Lord Chaitanya grains on the altar because he's also in the mood of a devotee, right? He's following Ekadashi, or Kapi, it's up to him, but in general, yeah. So those nuances are there. Thank you, very nice class.
These are all the fun, different... But when you're in a state of worshipping the Lord, different considerations will come according to the bhava of the devotee. Here... There's many considerations in terms of Maha and Ekadashi days, etc. We probably won't get into all that now. Typically, devotees will not take Maha, which has been offered to the Lord with grains, right? Even if some of those items were separate. However, here at the manor, we have special two offerings, which are without grains, the breakfast offering on Ekadashi days, and also the 9 o'clock one. So those devotees will happily take. But even Rajbhog offerings, even if the grain is kept separate, and the non-grain items are separate, devotees will typically not take the non-grain items because it will be considered to have been mixed by the Lord with the other grains. The Lord can eat anything. He can consume the entire world. But these restrictions and regulations are for us, not for the Lord. So we can practice something which is done based upon proper instruction, proper consideration. And the technicalities of whether something is right or wrong actually disappear completely into the background in favor of the Lord considering what is the consciousness of this person. And this is probably the most important factor that develops for a person who's actually in the transcendental realm, transcendental path, you can say. That what is the consciousness with which they make this decision or that decision? Not so much the specific end decision that's made. Thank you, Prabhuji. Okay, we have Prabhuji. Oh, Bishal, you want to ask?
Yeah,
you had a question.
Yeah,
it'll come to you.
Thank you for the very nice class, Prabhu. You're saying there's two paths, transcendence and sense gratification. Also, we're advised to also cultivate the modes of goodness, which still falls under the category of sense gratification. So how do you... What does that mean for us?
Yeah. So that falls into the category of this middle section. Don't forget, this middle section of the sense gratifier trying to become a transcendentalist. Elevating ourselves through the mode of goodness is a key aspect of that. And for us, it is done not specifically by exclusive cultivation of goodness. It is done by... Actually, our process of Harinam Sankirtan is so powerful that by adopting its traits and its subsidiary rules and regulations, you automatically function in goodness. Just by having Krishna at the center, everything else, on a material sense, starts to fall into level of goodness. The foods we eat, the environment we live in, automatically becomes goodness when you have Krishna at the center. So yes, that's actually the 80 to 90%, as I said, you know? And then you've got 5% there and whatever. The numbers you can debate. If you look at the numbers from the overall picture of the world, 90% plus is sense enjoyers, hard and fast sense enjoyers. Then what I'm speaking, this 80-90s, of those who are somewhat trying to do something spiritual. So the vast majority are in this intermediate phase, and a few are exclusively after transcendence. Prabhuji, and then someone had a hand up here as well, right? I did see someone's hand go up, no?
Thank you for a super class. Do you have any practical tips for those 80 to 90% who are stuck in that dead zone between sense enjoyment and trying to move into transcendence?
It's not a dead zone, I would say. It's not a dead zone. It's just a. It's a zone which.
Gray zone.
It's a gray. Okay, gray. Gray is a better word. It is a zone which offers you the chance to be honest with yourself. And each person can look at what attachments they have and they continue to hold on to. And it's not an exclusive feature of the Grihastha ashram. Many people, in fact, members of all the ashrams are often in the gray zone. But even if they may be acting as a brahmachari or acting as a vanaprastha, they're not quite fully there in terms of their determination. So it's an item for introspection for absolutely every single person. And the tip is really to do this introspection honestly. There will always be people who will convince you that whatever you're doing is fine and sufficient. And depending on who you look up to, accordingly your progress will take place. If you follow people who are always trying to encourage a lower standard, or those who are kind of satisfied with the standard they're on and they don't really wish to move up much, if you take routine instructions from them, you also won't move up. You will at best stay at that level. And as is the feature of this world, you will typically go downwards. Unless you're kind of striving to go upwards, you will typically, just by the inertia of this world, just be dragged down again. The prakshepatmika shakti drags you down, whether you do something or not, by being sort of steady. So try to look towards people who are practicing at a much higher level than you are. That's the best. A serious person, serious about transcendence, looks up to others who are doing better than them. The person who isn't so interested in transcendence looks to others to justify staying in the place they are. Hey, he's doing all right. Look at him. He's got this going on, that going on, that going on. What's wrong with it? Just relax a bit. It's okay. That's your choice. Each person has a choice. What level of transcendence do you want? But if you look up to someone who is practicing way better than you, and you have a desire to be to Krishna, you have a desire that you would like to develop some of their qualities, then you move through this gray zone. And if you're engaged in service 24 hours a day, which is actually possible for everyone, it's possible for everyone because it's a consciousness thing, not so much physical activity. If you're consciously engaged in service 24 hours a day, you can actually be in transcendence, whether you realize it or not. And that's the beauty of having a movement, that's the beauty of having a temple, that's the beauty of having a program of sadhana, where one can engage in spiritual life, spiritual Krishna consciousness 24 hours a day. It's possible. Anyone else? All right, well, I can just wish you a happy new year. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Grace, noble name, Chandra Prabhu ki.